I mean, I know Dave loves you lots here, holds you in very high regard. It's great to hear some of the stuff you're doing. We were really impressed, weren't we, Helen? Getting stuck in. I guess you know about our family, and you know we've got 3 adult kids, married, 4 grandkids. One wonderful thing to tell you is our daughter's expecting. Have they told you? Have he already told you? Oh, well, she's expecting. Yeah. Which is amazing after 10 months of chemotherapy. So she's thrilled and we're thrilled for it. So bring it on. We love grandchildren. I'm trained as a school teacher. I worked for a number of years and then worked for the church for lots of years. And then latterly, I worked for a project, a charitable company in Bristol that reached out to women selling sex on the street. In fact, Helen and I worked there together for quite some years. And Helen was trained as a lawyer, and she's a development manager. So we're quite used to doing stuff together, but it's exciting to come today. Apart from thank you for having me, thank you for what you've done so far. I'm so excited to say about it. I was just jumping up and down in the kitchen. Because it's just so generous of you. I know you're generous a lot, and thank you. And it will make a difference. It is already making a difference for the children and wives out there who haven't got a lot of hope. I haven't got any hope, actually. So, let me tell you how we first met Jane Lizzie.
Sure.
Lovely. Have they told you this? I'll tell you anyway. My version is probably a little different from Dave's. The woman's eyes. Yeah. Well, going back a lot of years now, in 1985, Dave and I, so this is a long time for him. He's about the same age as me and Dave. So going back to 1985, Dave and I were invited to a leadership school, international leadership school in Belgium by a couple called Rick and Patty Ridings. Do you know them? Heard of them? They run the 24/7 prayer house in Jerusalem now. Tell you what Rick wrote years ago. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his footstool. Do you know that one? Hold it. He wrote that. They're musicians, songwriters. And so we went to this little town in Belgium. We didn't know a soul. And the first morning, we came into a group a bit like this. And they started, and the whole group was praying around an Indian lady. And she had about a four-month child in her arms. And they explained to us that every morning, because there were about 15 nations represented with the people there, that they prayed every day for a nation. And today they were praying for Lizzie and for India. So we sort of stood back, Dave and I, because we just arrived and we, didn't want to push in. But before we did anything, the pastor's wife, she started to cry, and she got very, very assertive in saying, don't just walk up to this woman and lay hands on her. If you, she's living out her life in a very difficult circumstance. And if you put your hands on her, then that means that you want to be connected and you want to be involved and you're committing yourself. So I took another step back. Everyone just got there. It was a bit heavy. And as I stood there, I thought to myself, I represent a body, part of the body in Bristol, and I know there are people in our fellowship who really have a heart for India. And so as I stood there, I thought, no, I will go and lay hands on her. And they did too. And immediately I laid my hands on her, I had a vision, which really frightened me. The nature of the vision was quite dark, but why did I have a vision? What does this mean? Anyway, I talked to Lizzie about it afterwards, and she described what I saw, and she said, that's the area where we live. So I thought, oh, it looks like God is doing something. Well, Dave started to pray for her. And he took the 2 sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, as is seen praying for her. And you know, it's Manasseh, God has caused me to forget pain and the troubles. And then Ephraim, God will make me fruitful in the land of my affliction. And he prayed that over her. He said, and she said, this is Ephraim, my baby, the 4-month baby in her arms. So we sort of felt this is a God connection. And then Dave went out the next year and he took a team. And at that time, Jay and Lizzie were living in Agra. They're Tamils from the south of India, but they've become national missionaries and gone up. Well, they went up to Agra, they're in Delhi now. You know Agra, where the Taj Mahal is? And they were there for many years, but they've actually been in Delhi for 17 years now. And they had to learn Hindi, because Tamil was their mother tongue. And they suffered a lot. They sort of rented a couple of rooms up in Agra. And they just had family who were in the church back down in the south supporting them. And when I went for the first time in 1987 and took the four women of us went together, and we had just an amazing, amazing time of adventure. But just seeing their struggle, there were about five people in the church then, I think. And then, yeah.
Just got back to Jay.
And now there are over 120 churches they've planted across all different areas of India. They are an amazing couple, and we feel like we've journeyed with them. And God has joined us in relationship. We've had ups and downs. We've had, you know, disagreements and cultural struggles. And we had Jay and Lizzie's daughter to live with us at one point for 6 months. So we've had loads of, different things to overcome as we've walked together. But God has held us together. So apart from the 120 churches plus that they've got, they have a Bible school. Where they live in Delhi now, this is the church building. And just behind there is where Jay and Lizzie live. So they're in such different circumstances than when we first met them. They didn't have 2 rupees to rub together when we saw them. Honestly, they really, really struggled. They went through all kinds of persecution with the fundamental Hindus up there who broke into their little rooms, pulled all their furniture out on the street, took Lizzie. In fact, she was okay, she escaped, but it could have been absolutely dreadful. And on the campus as well, they have a Bible school for young men, often up to a dozen young men there. And a lot of the young men over the years now went out to church plant. They found them a wife, because they still very much do arrange marriages, although there's a lot more choice in it these days. But they still will if the guys want. So they planted them out all over the place. So they've got the churches and the Bible school. It's got an amazing orphanage. 66 girls in this orphanage right in the heart of Delhi. Beautiful girls who, goodness knows what would have happened to them if they hadn't. They're not all total orphans. Some have single parents who couldn't rear them, or all sorts of different circumstances. But they're just beautiful girls. And we've watched them grow up, of course. And actually, we always tease Jo and Lizzie that they raise the orphanage girls to marry the Bible school boys. And in fact, one is next month. And they'll probably be planted out or sort something. They're amazing. So they have the orphanage. And then they have the healthcare workers' work that goes on in the slums. And Helen and I have just been out. Helen's daughter's a doctor, so she and her husband, Kane, he's also a doctor, they brought a nurse friend, and they trained up 16 more health workers to work in the slum sector. Mm-hmm. And the original health workers were there as well, 15 of them, so it's about 31 young women, just beautiful, doing amazing, very simple, basic hygiene stuff, but the whole area has been changed. They're not seeing little babies dying necessarily, and just from cuts, septicemia, diarrhoea. One of the things they learned was that, you have to give, you know, loads of fluids if you have diarrhoea. And they thought, you mustn't give fluids because it just goes through them. So, of course, child is like dehydration. So, very simple stuff like that. But it was a privilege, wasn't it, Helen?
Can I just put in at this point to say that this very moment, probably, one of our friends, Ian Wilson, is updating our website, the Bridge Trust Limited website. So if you Google the Bridge Trust Limited, and we've got a new item that's going to be there about now on our trip to India and the healthcare worker training, really, isn't it? With some pictures that I was just thinking, because the existing healthcare workers came for this training in the most beautiful uniforms, most gorgeous saris, and that's their uniforms.
Yeah,
and anyway, we'll have about 6 or so pictures up of what, and a caption about what went on. And
They sort of shine like lights.
Yeah.
And Jay and Lizzie do. Jay's just got a beam. There's just something about him. It just leaves sounds out. I've always found that anyway. So, right, so I'm listing their stuff. Everywhere they go, as well, they start sewing schools. And these are for the sort of Hindu women who are under threat of dowry killings. And it's supposed to stop, but it still goes on all over India, particularly in the rural areas. When, you know, they'll murder, usually with kerosene, and that's been the tradition. The family will murder the woman in order for the man to marry again and get another dowry. And so they're trying to reach the Hindu women and give them a trade. So they always set up sewing schools. And right from the very early days of Agra, when we first got to know them for ourselves, Lizzie and Jay would go down early in the morning to the slums and take rice just to feed the people there. And they've continued that. And at the moment they're feeding every day 900 kids. Mm. And this is where you come into it. Well, I'm so excited because they, hundreds of those are through your generosity. Mm. And so everywhere they go, they try, if the church is able, depends where it is and how big it is, to start a slum school. And so when I was out in February, I went to a few slum schools. Now, we haven't got pictures of it. It's ever so difficult to make
got
pictures.
One. Yeah,
oh, good.
Slum school. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. But it's really
we
difficult.
Have
shown a set of oh, good. Yeah, yeah. Oh, good.
You know, the shots that you had in yeah. the summer.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Good. It's just incredible to go and see. I went to one. It had about 250 children in. It's been running for quite a few years now. And, well, a lot of years actually, 15, 16, 17 years even. And it's so ordered, and the kids all sit in rows. So they have a hot meal a day and some snacks. They have a school uniform, which they love, and they have a set of books. And they are taught, they're on the premises of this one. It's really rough and ready. No health and safety. I mean, as we will know here, it's just wild. But they don't have any accidents, it seems. And it's just a privilege to be there. I was going round, they had bean curry that day, so the mind boggles. But I was going round feeding them, but I couldn't do it quick enough. The workers were so quick. And the kids were just delightful. And so that way they get to know the families, so they plant a church in the sector of the slums. And then I went on to another one, which they just started, and it was in a terrible slum. I've never seen so many flies in my life. And we went through where there were, they just had this old army tent, and they brought the kids there, and they were bringing in the big pots of food and feeding them. Really poor, very malnourished children, hardly clothed. And but actually some of the people in the village nearby pulled that one down, but they won't, because they didn't have planning permission to put a tent up. But if they apply for planning permission, it would take years and years and years with the system over there, unfortunately. So they're now doing it under some sort of plastic covers. They're going to keep going. They're very determined. So that's what you've become part of. And we went, Helen, I'll pass to Helen now, who can start to tell you a bit about where we went and where the area that you're supporting is going to be.
Yes.
You've probably got, we've known Jay and Lizzie since 85. We trust them. We've seen what they do. We've seen how they do it. We sort of know them really well, and their attitude, their integrity, their spirit. So I do commend them to you as being a trustworthy place to where you put your money. Because you want to know you're putting your money where it can be trusted, don't you? Your hard-earned money. But I really commend them to you. Mm. They're amazing. And unselfish, generous, a real heart for the kingdom of God. When Jay left Tamil, he was a professor of English down south, and Lizzie was a headmistress of a secondary school. When they gave that up and they went, Jay said to God, send me to the hardest place, send me to the hardest place, Lord. And I think God...
The Welsh and the Indian accent.
When I go to an Indian restaurant, I can usually understand, because they say, do you want chicken on the bone or not? And they say, oh, I think chicken on the bone or not. I think it's a bit like the Welsh intonation. Helen, I'm happy to carry on.
Yeah, well, this was my first trip to India. It was very, very interesting. And just to kind of, I don't know if you want an idea of the geography, where Ree was talking about that she saw the the two slum schools, the one that's kind of well established and the one that was in a tent that's now under plastic sheets because they've lost the tent. That's in... let me see. Yeah, I'm coming to go this way. If this is this is the centre of Delhi here, right? The slum school is in an area, the two that revisited are in an area called Mangalpuri, which is kind of over here to the west of Delhi, the west of the centre. And this area that we went to, which is where the healthcare training is, and where they're about, they've got an existing couple of slum schools, haven't they? And they're about to set up the new one that you're supporting. That's in the kind of south here. So here, if this is the middle of Delhi, and here's the road going down to Agra, just here. Which is about a 2-hour train journey away. It's kind of here on the south side, just west of the main one of the main highways that links Delhi. Well, the main highway that links Delhi and Agra, one of the main highways in India. And there's the main river that comes here. I had to know that. I had to tell you that because I have to kind of get an idea of where I am. Otherwise, it's a total mystery going on. Anyway, so this area, this slum, is called Guatanpuri, and it's actually made up of kind of at least four districts. There's this district that the church has been working in now for about 10 years, and this is an area of about 40,000 people, and it's a mixture of kind of these kind of thrown up brick buildings and tents. I don't know whether anyone has kind of cottoned on to the last few Wednesdays. There's been a programme on Channel 4 called Welcome to India. You've seen it, have you, Dave?
I've
lined it up to watch, yeah. Well, I was really gave me insight into what we've kind of quickly gone through, because it's actually looking at, I'd recommend it to you, the last one will probably be on the iPlayer thing still from last Wednesday night, Channel 4. And it shows you these, it gets you inside some of the houses, and actually in Calcutta and Mumbai, I think, is where they're filming. But it looks so similar to what we've seen. Mm-hmm. I thought it's really, you know, it's worth a look to see, because they typically would have, apart from these kind of houses, they have shelters where they're just bamboo poles, and as we said about plastic, it is like, you know, you get those great big bags that cement and sand and stuff. It's quite typically sort of like stuff like that, so it's just recycled, reused rubbish, really. Lots of them. In this area, you notice in this picture there's loads of power lines and stuff and the odd satellite dish. Well, this is like a slum area. It's kind of off the grid as far as, you know, Delhi, if they have such a thing as Delhi Council. I'm not sure, but imagine they do have Delhi City Council, or certainly government organisation. So there is, the people will kind of like illegally wire into the, you know, the state supply or whatever it is of electricity. So there's loads of lines stuck all over the place, power lines. Because it's been established for a little while, you can see there are some proper sort of like concretey sort of streets. So a lot of the time we were travelling through on the main roads, they were covered with, maybe there was concrete under them, but they were covered with dust and rubbish. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly, I was told that in the monsoon, there's so much kind of gunge and rubbish that it's like wading through mud. So these are the kind of shelters that are kind of put up alongside where there's, you know, more people, new people come to the area, and that's where people live. And they sleep on cloths, just sleep on cloths on the floor under there. And typically that's about, as I said, about 5 or 6 people we were told would live in one of those. And if you look at that programme, you know, you can see actually sort of like you get a glimpse inside and see how it is, just with a few possessions. This is on the Friday we were there, we went into the slum, and we had to drive in, so hence why you've got the windscreen boxes in the bottom there, because the church is working in a very sensitive environment where there are quite a lot of Hindu fundamentalist, extremist people, and they're very, I think Delhi is sort of north of India, and Delhi is much more kind of anti-Western than the south of India. And much more Hindu and more hostile to the Western people and to Christianity. So we had to be sensitive, and we had to just travel in our vehicle through. And sort of, I had one of those little tiddly-widdly cameras, so I'm just taking pictures. And this woman obviously is, see all the rubbish on the floor. She's just taking home some shopping. But the other thing that we were told was that there's no, because it's off the grid, it's not an established area. there's no running water. So that there are a few standpipes that the government have put in. So the women will also have to go regularly and go to the standpipe, might be kind of like 200 or 300 metres away, and carry home all the water that they need to cook with or to wash with, wash themselves, wash clothes, everything. Yeah, this just another quick, you know, shot out the window. So this is this lady's home, I assume. It's behind the curtain. And it's interesting, we're told about the cooking facilities. So behind these kind of shelters of just cloth and plastic and bamboo, they'd either have an open fire to cook on or kerosene stoves. And one of the things that the women who were doing the healthcare training said was that they wanted to learn how to treat burns. Because obviously it's incredibly, 5 or 6 people in a little place that's about 8 foot by 6 foot, and you've got your cooking facilities there and everything, you know, if it's wet, kids, all the kids in there, evening, all the kids, it's really dangerous. There was part there, I noticed the government on the side of the roads, there was some sort of like campaign posters saying, make Delhi a kerosene stove free area by next year or the year after or something like that. Yeah. This is, Tree, do you want to jump in? Tree, jump in if you like.
Little boy just said he didn't have any trousers on, so that's why it's...
we've cropped.
That's so typical, you know, they just haven't. So, yeah, so this, see the rubbish dump, that is so typical as well. Actually, I've gone into slums in years past where I've had to walk through nearly 3 or 4 foot of rubbish. And it's harder to take in. So yes, well, you can see some of the stats yourself there. On the news last night, it had nearly 50% of under fives were malnourished in India. Did you see that?
Mm.
Yeah. You're feeding some of them.
Yeah.
It feels like a drop in the ocean, doesn't it? But it makes a difference to those kids. And, lots of people do it.
And you said you found out it's mainly the girls, isn't it? So they tend to sort of like, well, feed the boys.
They still kill off the girl babies in the rural areas. The boy is highly prized because of the dowry and all that. And when he gets older, where you have to pay for masses for the girl's wedding and give the dowry. So the malnourishment is higher among the girls. The stats I looked at anyway, which I could believe.
Yeah.
But yes, that was a... Yeah, look, 9.5% don't see their fifth birthday. In the area where we went this time, some of the health workers are working. As they told you this before, that they used to see 40 or so infant deaths in that sector, and they still haven't seen the deaths, which is almost unbelievable. But we were there and we heard it for ourselves, you know. I said, really, is that true? Because, you know, you have all kinds of situations. And when we walked through and we met one of the health workers
on
her duties,
on the job, yeah.
She, like I said about Jane, she shone. She stood out. She was so excited to see us as well and came over. But we had to go through very carefully because you can't go into a slum where people are living. You just snap them. It's just so insensitive. Mm. And carry on.
So the main killers of children, as Ruth said, is diarrhoea and dehydration, diarrhoea. Well, you can imagine, can't you? You know, you're going to pick up tummy bugs. With things like that, with the situation like this, and no running water, no, it's very difficult to kind of keep clean. Yeah, typhoid's another one. But respiratory problems, they're another main problem for kids, causing infant deaths. Here's another little chap that I didn't realise I was snapping him, I just kind of saw that Vinod Enterprises and kind of went, but he's a little chappy with nothing on. And we found out that, as you can see there, that... more than half the kids don't get their immunisations. So one of the things that the health workers were being encouraged to do is to actually make sure that parents take their kids to the local clinic and get them immunised.
They're afraid to, aren't they? The village people, the slum people. But the healthcare workers are changing that.
Yeah. Yes. Look, they love cricket. You know, when you Indians like cricket, but you know how you go around here and boys are playing football all the time? Well, they play cricket. It's amazing. Mm. So this, see his stumps in there. Just kind of saw him out, and there were 2 or 3 other boys with him playing cricket.
You should have been in school.
Yeah. Yeah. So we found out that most of the, I mean, we were told by one of the health co-workers that we talked to, that most of the kids, you see, don't go to school. There are state government schools, but there's nobody to make them, and the parents don't. There's no kind of school inspectors, you know, that go around making the kids go to school. So that, we found out 53% of India's children don't go to primary school. So what the church is doing, and what you're, you know, what you'll be joining and supporting with, is actually kind of, they go round and round up the kids, you know, and say, come on, school, you know, and as well as, you know, it being a really good system and much more hope and the feeding thing, and it all helps to get the kids to go to school. And I was talking to one of the health workers and sort of, you know, and it was the pastor actually who is overseeing the health work and the school, slum school in this Guatanpuri area. And he said, yeah, by the age of 10, don't know how old you guys are, that most of the boys will be involved in crime. And by 15, there are many 15-year-old boys in prison for pretty serious offences, violence, mugging and even murder. It's a very dangerous area to live in. So you've seen people seen Slumdog Millionaire? Mm. Yeah, no, bit like that. That was kind of real. Yeah, no public services, there's no covered sewers. And we thought it was surprising to see pigs in the street rooting through the rubbish.
Lots of dogs.
Yeah.
Mm. Cows.
So this is the older area, and they've actually got a gutter. In the newer area, which is where the new slum school is, which we'll show photos of in a minute. We couldn't go in it because there are no roads, and there won't be any gutters. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing. It's just shacks and tents been put up on bare ground.
You're pioneering.
Yeah,
pioneering.
You are. I like
really
that.
Really moving.
Mm. Surprise. Mm-hmm. They look white and clean. I wonder how they keep clean. Mm-hmm. This, you know, I knew about the sacred cows, but I said it's my first trip to India, and cows are everywhere. And, you know, there's a dual carriageway, and there were these cows in the middle of a dual carriageway, and all the kind of the taxis and all the cars kind of going round them, and they just sort of sit there and I think, oh yeah, nice bit of grass down the middle of the dual carriageway. We'll have a lunch. Really weird.
And I've never seen them hit. No. Amazing. It's yeah. A chaotic driving, and yet the cows. Yeah. They're sacred. Yeah. You often see elephants walking down the road.
Yeah.
And camels.
So here in the slum, this was a bit of wasteland between the two slum areas. We've seen the first one, 40,000 people in, and then we went to another area where there are 35,000 people, and there was this bit of kind of waste ground in between where these cows were. Yeah, I don't know if you know, but Hinduism accounts for about 80% of religious following in India, and Christianity is only 2.5%. So the cows have it. That was some more slum dwellers. And only, they came around, a lot of the untouchables, you know, the Dalit, which are the lowest caste in Hindu society, a lot of them would be slum dwellers, and it's only them, actually, in India that eat pigs, and Christians. Because, obviously, you don't if you're a Muslim, and you don't if you're a Hindu either. So we had lovely Indian food while we were there, didn't we? Lizzie's a really keen cook. So we had lots of really, really good food, but what the staple is, you know, it is rice, but I was surprised it's a lot of it is wheat made into kind of like flat chapati things, like they call them rotis there. Mm-hmm. It's just wheat and flour, and you fry it, and then you mop up your dinner with it. And the slum dwellers will mostly, of course, have rice and these rotis and chapatis and a few vegetables like bananas and a few other veggies. I asked the pastor, so what, you know, there must be a lot of unemployment then in the slums. And he said, he had this really, really high. But there's a lot of kind of, they're very entrepreneurial, lot, aren't they, Indians?
Oh, so resourceful.
Yeah. Mm. So there's a lot of recycling of rubbish, like one of those programs that you'll probably watch, Dave. It shows you this woman in one of the slums who gets her sons to pick through all these piles of rubbish that we've seen and get all the plastic bottles, and then she sells them on and she makes a bit of money. And these guys here, we just kind of clipped and spotted them. They were breaking chains, which presumably they're going to recycle as scrap metal. And this is the sort of like marketplace.
Not a lot for sale.
Yeah, there's not much for sale. There's a few bananas there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of men hanging around, and we also were told there's a lot of well, it's high in employment. There's a lot of alcoholism. This is one of these entrepreneurial chaps.
Tries to shut their cycles to shop around.
Who's that conservative minister under Thatcher that they get on your bike? Anyway, Trump. He'd be proud of him, wouldn't he? And another guy said, this is moving to the new slum area, which is where the new school is going to be. And so this guy's already set up shop. Looks like the back of a kind of cart or something, isn't it? Lorry or something. Sort of a mix, obviously a very mixed business. He's selling sweets and tyres and Coca-Cola. This is it. So we could only go on this road, and we just have to take photos over the side. So you can see it's just shacks here in this area. And this is an area where there are 8,000 people are already there in these temporary shelters. And the majority of the, well, not the majority, well, some, in this, in another slum area that the church work in this area, it's an area of 5,000 people, and 3,000 of those are children. Mm. So let me guess, at least half of, about 4,000 kids that they're kind of touched, probably won't, you know, they're only able to get about 300 into school, is it? But it's a big, it's good impact, isn't it? Oh, I put daily instead of daily. Oops. Daily life. This is
actually it is daily.
I think there is a dot.
Oh, okay. I'm good.
I'm going to type that.
Just a bit of a zoom in there, so you can see what the, you know, what the area is like where the school's going to be. Lots of rubbish again, and the inevitable kind of wires all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Bicycles, and amazingly satellite dishes. Do you remember in Slumdog Millionaire where they all, everybody kind of, you know, they use a cell phone, they've got cell phones, and they all zoom to watch the telly. This is the school.
This is the school I was talking to you about earlier. But there's 250 children, all in their little classes, so there's their uniforms look.
You should explain to the woman.
Oh, this is Cara. Cara
from Bristol.
From Bristol. Yes. She went out on the team. And she's a teacher, and she went in to have a little bit of time with this group of children. And there's about five or six classes there. Right, there's a preschool there, daycare centre, and then the primary school. And then from the primary school, they go on to the government school. So that's obviously she's showing them her phone. And I love going in. I tell you what they do there, though. It's they don't learn by play or anything progressive. It's very much by rote. But that's where they're at. I know there were some whispers about, helping teacher-wise. Maybe down the road we'll see.
Yeah.
But so that's the pastor called Deepak cares for that, and he lives there with his family, two children and his wife Mooney, and he is a Bible school boy who's gone right through it all and is pastoring there and caring for this slum school.
I should say Western Delhi. It's me getting there,
Oh, right.
We've got Delhi. How do you spell it?
No, there is an I there.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's been typing very late last night.
Okay, we're Western anyway, and that's probably me because I always get muddled up if I'm looking. I did get geography O level, but
you see that the walls, you know, is nothing is very very smart, and the old treadle sewing machine is typical. But you know,
but don't the kids look smart? You know, once they've got their uniforms,
they do. Yeah. They come out of these little hovels and white shirts. Quite remarkable.
This is this chap here with his arm in a bandage because this was at the healthcare training. This is Naveen, the littler chap. And he's the pastor who is in charge of the Grattampuri Church group, and he's the one who's overseeing the slum school in that area and the new slum school as well.
Mm-hmm. And he was a Bible school boy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He's now pastor, married with two little girls.
Yeah. And his wife's smaller than him, isn't she?
Yeah. I've got heels on, but I feel really tall. The only thing, he's much shorter than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other guy's
wonderful.
He's the kind of techie man for the church.
Yeah. And the translator.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
See the women in the background with some of those in the pink and blue saris, they're the current health workers, you know, established health workers. Yeah. That's their uniform.
Did we show you a picture of the women in the uniform? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pink with green saris.
Yes, they've got four sets. Yeah. That they all decide which day they're going to wear which colour.
We had 3 days of training, didn't we? And they came in a different sari every day.
Yeah,
and then the new ones, of course, were just in their own mixed muff.
Yeah.
This is Naveen with this girl called Bindu. Do you want to say about her? Because
Bindu,
we talked to her, didn't we, through a translator?
Yeah. Bindu first came to the daycare centre in the slum that Naveen was working in and planting a church in the area when she was 3 years old. And she then stayed in the primary school since she was 10. She's now in her last year of government school, and she's training to be a house worker. So she's going to go back and work in this same slum that she lives and where she's been brought up. And a sweet girl,
very
wasn't she?
Nice, yeah.
And very, and see again, she is living in the slums, and look at her.
Smart, yeah.
Beautiful.
You know, they're houses that we saw to start with.
Yeah.
This one of those, you know, with no running water. And
And Naveen is such a man of God. He has been working now with Jane Lizzie 17 years at least, since they came to Delhi. And he's faithful, I mean, to carry on, you know, sticking this out year after year.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a real heart for the people, and a heart for God and for the church, kingdom of God. They are an inspiration. Mm-hmm. You do go there and you feel inspired and challenged.
She said to us, didn't she? We said, why do you want to be a healthcare worker? And she said, because I want to help Pastor Naveen and I want to help my community.
Mm.
But really a strong link with Naveen. Mm. And here she is again. yeah, that's what she said. I thought this kind of like looks, it's the middle of, she's only taking notes, but she looks like she's thinking about what she's going to be doing. It reminds me when I was thinking about it yesterday, that she's like looking to the future, and I kind of thought of the verse in Jeremiah that, you know, that says that I've got plans for you, good plans, to give you a future and a hope. And I thought, well, that's what we're doing by being involved in India, and well, what particularly they're doing, we're just playing a little part of giving all these slum dwellers who've got, you know, hopeless situations, but we're giving them a future and a hope, all those kids particularly.
Mm.
That's us.
That's
us.
Thanks for listening.
Okay. What we'll do now is we'll, if you want to ask questions in a moment, I suggest you come up the front, because those of you who need to be with kids. That's been really great. The piece of information you need to have is, coincidentally, and of course that has to go in inverted commas, it's worked out that I'm able to be with Dave when he goes to Delhi in January. It's just the coldest time of year, of course.
It was too hot when we were there.
What that's about is a good chance to get to know Pastor Jay and get him to pray for me. I'm always likely prayed for by people who have planted a lot of churches, because we've only got two so far, so, you know, there's more to come. It will also mean that I then go on with Dave to a pastor's conference, which is down in Chennai. So I get to know some of the pastors as well. Now, I know the guys were found problems with taking their photographs. I will probably, with permission, push it a bit, because I've got myself in trouble in other places taking photographs and filming. But hey, you know, sort of, it's what we're in business for, to sometimes get the story back. But actually, we'll be able to work out what's possible. We'll be able to talk and see, because of the resistance, quite reasonably, people are fed up with the British Raj and attempts to reinstitute it by saying how much better we are. So it's really, the first bit is making friends with these guys. And the logic of what we're doing is this: Dave and Ree trust Pastor Jay.
Mm-hmm.
We trust Dave and Ree. So that's why we're sure that our money goes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that position, of course, you don't need a trust, actually a trust. almost that, and so we're working through the Bridge and Bridge Trust for pushing the money through. If you look on the Bridge Trust website, Bridge Trust Limited, fine. Some of the pictures are up there.
Thank you for listening to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.